Ah, te disse? Atha, even though etat, this, api, also, ashakta, unable, asi, you are, kartum, to perform, mat, unto me, yogam, in devotional service, ashita, taking refuge, sarva karma, of all activities, phala, of the results, tyagam, renunciation, tataha, then, kuru, do, yata atmavan, self-situated. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act, giving up all results of your work, and try to be self-situated. Please repeat. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act, giving up all results of your work, and try to be self-situated. Purport. It may be that one is unable even to sympathize with the activities of the Krishna consciousness, activities of Krishna consciousness, because of social, familial, or religious considerations, or because of some other impediments. If one attaches himself directly to the activities of Krishna consciousness, there may be objections from family members or so many other difficulties. For one who has such a problem, it is advised that he sacrifice the accumulated results of his activities to some good cause. Such procedures are described in the Vedic rituals, in the Vedic rules. There are many descriptions of sacrifices and special functions of punya, or special work, in which the results of one's previous action may be applied. Thus one may gradually become elevated to the state of knowledge. It is also found that when one who is not even interested in the activities of Krishna consciousness gives charity to some hospital or some other social institution, he gives up the hard-earned results of his activities. That is also recommended here, because by the practice of giving up the fruits of one's activities, one is sure to purify his mind gradually, and in that purified stage of mind, one becomes able to understand Krishna consciousness. Of course, Krishna consciousness is not dependent on any other experience, because Krishna consciousness itself can purify one's mind. But if there are impediments to accepting Krishna consciousness, one may try to give up the results of his activities. In that respect, social service, community service, national service, sacrifice for one's country, etc., may be accepted, so that someday one may come to the stage of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 18:46, we find it is stated, Yata pravrittir bhutanam. If one decides to sacrifice for the Supreme Cause, even if he does not know that the Supreme Cause is Krishna, he will come gradually to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Cause by the sacrificial method. Om Jnanam Timurandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Svapadantikam. So I'll read a few verses before this and then this verse again. Text 8, just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Then you will live in me always without a doubt. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulated principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act, giving up all results of your work, and try to be self-situated. So I was recently reading one book where there's a quote from Mother Teresa. In that quote, she says, "The fruit of silence is prayer, the fruit of prayer is love, and the fruit of love is service." So this is something that she practiced in her own life, right, where she was very famous for all the service that she did. She opened orphanages for children. She basically, she was an example of a person whose life was engaged in service for others. And Srila Prabhupada also translated bhakti, which is a Sanskrit word which basically means love, or it means devotion. He translated that as devotional service, right? Because he also had the same point that devotion or love means service, right? And because in any relationship, our love is shown in the way we serve that other person, right? Just like if two people are in love, then they may exchange some letters, right? And they say, "I love you," and the other say, "I love you," and then they may exchange some flowers, "I love you," like this. And so many times they tell each other, "I love you, I love you, I love you." But then, at a certain point in time, in order to increase that love, one of the members of the couple, or of that party, needs to take the other person out for dinner. You take him out for dinner. You take him to some nice restaurant, and there you perform some activity to express that love. So bhakti is like that, where bhakti means service. And Krishna is first urging Arjuna to just serve him, right? He says, just engage just work for me, he says, right? Because the ultimate goal is that we want to remember Krishna non-stop. We want to remember Krishna always. And in order to do that, we need to practice the rules and regulations of bhakti. We need to practice certain rules and regulations. But many of us may experience that we're unable to follow those, right? Our mind and senses are too disturbed. We can't control our senses. We can't control our mind. We can't get rid of the desires that are in our mind. So we may be in that situation, and then we may wonder, well, what can I do? In other words, my mind isn't there. My senses aren't controlled. It seems like there's no hope for me. And Krishna here is saying, yes, there is hope. Because if we're in that situation, we cannot control or do anything these things, but all we can do, we know, I can help, right? I can help in Krishna's cause. I have two hands, I have two legs. By Krishna's grace, I can work for him. And even though my mind isn't there, if I physically work for him, then ultimately my mind and senses will get there, right? Will be there. Just like I never really liked to study, right? But then when I went to university, then my ambitions were never related to studying. You know, my ambitions were maybe, let's say, in making money, or becoming famous, or this or that. But when I went to university, then because of the atmosphere there, my ambitions changed. Then suddenly I wanted to be the most intelligent student, right? Or I wanted to become a famous writer. So our ambitions change according to the company that we have and according to the work that we engage in. Right? My mind wasn't there, I didn't want to study. But because I was there and I was going through the motions of studying, then gradually my mind and my senses followed my work. So the same idea is given here, where Prabhupada, Krishna is saying, well, if you can't follow the principles of or the practices of bhakti, then just work for me. Right? He's saying just engage in some physical activity, in some any activity. It doesn't have to be physical, even let's say verbal or mental, but just offering the results of our work for Krishna. Just do that, and the rest will come. And we see this, Srila Prabhupada taught us like this, when he established this movement, then he would engage people in Krishna service, knowing that that engagement would ultimately lead them to perfection. So he would engage them in various activities. And we find that in our temples as well, that those who engage in a lot of service, they very quickly get a taste for chanting, they very quickly get a taste for reading, and they make a rapid spiritual advancement. But then the problem may come that someone will say, well, and oftentimes we meet people like this where they say, I don't want to be so religious, right? For some reason or the other, I don't see value in helping a religious cause. You know, right now there's people who are starving, they're hungry, there's so many problems in society, environmental problems and this and that. I want to help in such and such way. And Prabhupada here in this purport, he's very sympathetic to such a state of mind. He's saying for some reason or the other, someone may not be able to take to the Krishna consciousness movement immediately due to social, familial, or religious considerations. So, for such a person, here Krishna is saying, okay, if you cannot work for me, then he's saying, just give up the results of your work. Just do sacrifice. That's all that's being said here, that just do sacrifice. Do something for others. Do some charity. Do something good. So, this point of sacrifice, Prabhupada, again and again, if you hear his tapes, he has one theme which he oftentimes repeats. And our expert from Vanipedia may confirm this. He says, so many tapes that I heard, he uses this phrase, he says, become pious, right? He says, become pious. There's this, because until we purify our minds by becoming pious, it is very difficult to appreciate spiritual matters, right? We have to at least have this, we should at least be pious. We should not be sinful. Sinful meaning when we perform, acts that are, hurtful or dangerous for the world. That piety in some ways is the basis of any spiritual life. This is why Krishna himself as Buddha came to teach non-violence. Because until people are on the level of violence, then they cannot understand spiritual life, right? Until they're eating meat, until they are hurting other living beings, how can we understand spiritual life? We must become pious. Right? Of course, this isn't a complete, a prerequisite for spiritual life. It is possible that if someone is not pious, they also may become devotees of Krishna by the mercy of the devotee and the acharyas. But generally speaking, and this also we've experienced, people who are very sinful, who have very bad habits, it's very difficult for them to take to spiritual life. We have to face it. Just like if we have, we had one person coming to the temple, and he was going late night to the bars every night, and he just had a very sort of, heavy type of a lifestyle. And he was coming and he was trying, he was really attracted to Krishna consciousness and all these things. But every time he would try to make advancement, his lifestyle would pull him back. You know, he would still end up at the bar, or he'd end up drunk, or this or that, because it was difficult for him to give up that type of lifestyle. And then, as a result, his mind was not able to fix his mind on Krishna. And here Prabhupada in the purport is saying that to fix the mind on Krishna requires a pure mind. And the process of becoming pious and giving up the results of our work to Krishna purifies the mind. So it becomes ready, it becomes like a sponge to take in spiritual life. Just like we read so many times, right, that we read how it said that if one once hears the name of Krishna, one gets pure love for Krishna. Right? Or we read in the Bhagavatam that if you read this narration once, you know, this narration of, let's say, Dhruva Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj, then after that you attain liberation or you get pure love of God. So sometimes you may wonder that all these things are written in the scripture, are they false? Because we've read them so many times, right, over and over again, and it doesn't seem to happen. Well, in the Bhagavatam, it's described that if we smelled even the tulsi leaf, or offer some water to the tulsi plant, we get love for Krishna. So why aren't these things happening to us? Well, in the Bhagavatam, there's a story of the four Kumaras. When they visited Vaikuntha, the planet of Lord Vishnu, the planet of Krishna, then when they were going towards the Vaikuntha planets, then at that time they didn't have love for Krishna. They weren't they were advanced souls, they were great mystic yogis, but they didn't have love for Krishna. And it's described that when they were going towards Vaikuntha Loka, then just by the smell of the tulsi leaf, this leaf that is on Krishna's feet, just by smelling that, they attained pure love for Krishna. And why was it? Because through their practice of austerities and meditation and penance, their heart and their mind was so purified that the moment that they smelled the tulsi leaf from Krishna's lotus feet, then they immediately developed love for Krishna. So, if our mind and our senses are like that, then the same thing will happen to us. But because it's not been fully purified, our mind and senses have not been fully purified, then we have to work so hard, and gradually, through this process of hearing and chanting, we scrub that mind, like we scrub a pot or something, and we cleanse it, and then gradually our mind and senses, they become fixed in Krishna. So Queen Kunti, she prays for this, right? In her prayers to Krishna, Queen Kunti was one of the saints of our tradition. She was the mother of the Pandavas, and she was the ideal example of a great devotee of Krishna. And she in her prayers, she prays to Krishna. How does that verse start? In any case, it ends Gange Vogham Udanvati, where Queen Kunti, she prays that let my mind forever flow to you, Krishna, as the rivers flow to the ocean. Let my attraction and my concentration to you be so strong that it's not that I have to really try hard to try to fix my mind on Krishna. Right? Let me fix it. But rather my mind runs towards you, where it will be hard for me to take my mind off of you. So this may seem very inconceivable. But again, using that same example, when two people are in love, and especially if that love is very new, then they're constantly thinking about one another, right? So much so that their studies suffer. They can't concentrate on their studies, or they can't concentrate on their work, or where it becomes hard to take their mind off of that object. And Queen Kunti is asking for that same type of love for Krishna, right? Where she's saying that let my mind forever flow to your lotus feet. Just as the rivers, as the Ganges River flows to the ocean. Yes, specifically not just rivers, the Ganges River flows to the ocean. Now, Many of you may have seen various rivers. The Ganga is the largest, most powerful river in the world, right? Because it comes from the Himalayas, which is the biggest mountain range in the world. So it is, you know, the strongest river in the world. And if you go especially near its source, you find that it's flowing, it's just rushing down, right? Because it is a huge glaciers on the top, and then they come down the Himalayas, which are the highest peaks in the world. And when this Ganga comes down, it rushes down so fast that no one actually dares even bathe in the Ganga there. So people go all the way up there to see the source of the Ganga, but then no one actually takes a bath there. Because the force of that river is so much that if you put your leg into it, then immediately it'll be hit like a car hit your feet. Because it's going so fast that you won't be able to stand there. And you'll be thrown into the river and you'll just flow down all the way to the ocean. And many people 2000 or probably get stuck somewhere in the middle, in some rock or something like this. Many people have died this way, actually, up there. That's why they warn people, because it's so attractive when you go there, the river is just gushing, and you think, oh, let me just go in and, you know, take a bath. So, but what happens, of course, if you do that, you'll get swept away. But what happens sometimes is people put their hand in or their leg in, and just that, it's just the force is so great that immediately your hand moves. Just to give you an idea, the river is so big that if you were to throw a truck into the river, then after like 2 seconds, you wouldn't be able to see it. It's so strong. It's so strong and it's so deep there at its source. So the flow of the Ganga towards the ocean is so strong. Right? It's so strong that nothing can stop it. They recently made a dam up there in the Himalayas. It's called the Tiveri Dam. And because it's the biggest river in the world, this dam is the biggest dam in the world. And so it generates the most amount of power that any dam generates. Once they get this fully running, it'll generate enough power, they claim, that it'll power the entire northern India, but they'll have additional power, so they'll sell it off to China. So the whole river, they're trying to dam it. Now, in order to do that, there's about 2 or 3 miles of just a lake in the middle of the mountains in the Himalayas. So you're going up the mountains, and you know there's mountains and rivers, and suddenly you see a lake in the middle of the mountains. That's because of all the water that they've stopped from this dam. So people try to stop the Ganga, but after a while, it's such a strong river, these dams, they break. Right? And they break, and then they have to rebuild the whole thing like this. Because the attraction of the river to the ocean is so strong. It's so strong. So, and that is at the current day. Now the glacier has gone down so much, right? Because of global warming and all these things, the glacier is receding. So during Queen Kunti's time, which was 5,000 years ago, we can imagine how powerful the Ganga was at that time. That wherever it flowed, it was so powerful. So she's requesting Krishna that, please, let my attraction to you, let my mind run after you like the Ganges River runs towards the ocean. The rivers are compared to wives of the ocean because they all are attracted to the ocean. So in the same way, the soul is naturally meant to be attracted to Krishna, because Krishna is the all-attractive person. He's the most attractive person, and the soul is naturally attracted to Krishna. The soul has forgotten that attraction. But Krishna is the, you could say, the reservoir of all these perfect qualities. Right, of unlimited, beautiful qualities. That the moment the soul sees or comes in contact with Krishna, he cannot think of anything else. So Queen Kunti is desiring this. She's saying that my mind should become such that it will flow to you, that it will be attracted to you in such a way that nothing else in this world will be able to attract it. So at the higher stage of spiritual life isn't a repression or a regulation or something that we're forced to do. In the beginning, it's a little bit like that because we don't have the practice. We don't have the taste for Krishna. So in the beginning, we have to, like it said, we have to work for Krishna to purify that mind. We have to perform sacrifice to purify that mind. We have to perform the regulations of bhakti to purify that mind. And it's not easy. The path to Krishna is easy in one way, but at the same time, it's not easy to purify this mind. Great endeavor is required. But then once that endeavor is there, and our attraction is fixed on Krishna, then nothing else can attract us in this world. The residents of Vrindavan, they complain about this. They say that the whole world is trying to fix their mind on Krishna. And they say, we are trying to keep our mind off of Krishna. Right? We're trying to keep our mind away from Krishna so that we can have a little bit of peace. Right? But at every moment we're thinking about Him so much that the thought of Him and separation from Him gives us so much agony. Just like during the day, Krishna leaves the residence of Vrindavan and He goes to the forest. So when Krishna leaves during the day and He goes to the forest, then it would be so nice if they could just forget about Krishna. They could just forget about Him, not have to worry about Him. And they could go on with their daily activities. But all day, they're thinking about Krishna, and how Krishna's looking, and how He must be walking in the forest. Who might He be meeting today in the forest? Which demon will He be getting rid of in the forest this time? How must he be dressed? So all day they're thinking about Him and waiting until when Krishna will return. Then when time comes for Krishna to return, then they get on their on the balconies of their homes and they're seeing from a distance far away that always Krishna returning. And then Krishna is coming with His millions of cows, right? All these millions of cows are coming in after Krishna. So these cows, definitely, they're creating a big, you know, cloud of all this dust. And so when they see that dust cloud, then they say, oh, that means Krishna is coming, right? Krishna is coming. And so then when they see that, then a great festival happens because everyone, suddenly the whole town comes to life that Krishna is coming back. So they start to arrange for His arrival, right? Lay flowers or, you know, do so many things for His arrival. But they're waiting to see Krishna, right? The whole day they've been separated from Him and they're waiting to see Krishna. So they're seeing this dust storm. And then gradually, as Krishna comes closer, they start to see His form and His beautiful features and the way He's dressed and the way He's there with His friends and the cowherd boys and the cows. So the residents of Vrindavan, they say this. They say, through our eyes, we're trying to see so many different things, right? We're trying to visit so many places and see so many objects. But he says, well, what is the perfection of this seeing? We're so much into seeing things. That's why we watch so many different movies, because we want to see the best scenes, right? One movie and then, well, this one's even better, so we watch that, because we want to find the perfection of the eyes. So they say the perfection of the eyes is to see Krishna and Balaram along with their friends coming in with, they say, oh friends, there is no greater perfection of the eyes than to see Krishna and Balaram together coming in with their belts tied on their side and with ropes around their shoulders for tying the cows and surrounded by the cows and the cowherd boys. He says, this vision is constantly imbibed. Right? This is the constant vision that they are meditating upon. So such a state of mind can only happen when our mind is purified. And the first step in purification that's described here is sacrifice. Right? So this is why in Vedic culture, every stage in life is meant to be a stage in which there's some sort of sacrifice. Because Krishna says in the Gita, sacrifice, charity, yajna, dana, and tapa. Right? Sacrifice, charity, yajna, dana, and tapa, and austerity, Krishna says, purify even the great souls. So these are never to be given up. Because the basis of this world and the basis of human life is sacrifice. Right? That's why in actually in the Vedas, there's this idea of Rita. Rita means this cosmic order, that this world runs on a cosmic order. And we have to align ourselves with this cosmic order. And the way to do that, is yajna. That's why they have so many yajnas or sacrifices in the Veda. It's through sacrifice we align ourselves with this cosmic order. And it's through sacrifice that society and the world moves forward. Right? Just like the parents, they sacrifice so much for the child. But if they don't do that, then there is unwanted progeny in this world. Right? Arjuna is saying then the society is unhappy because there's unhappy children. And unhappy children means unhappy people. And if there's unhappy people, then society cannot go on. So in every stage of life, there's the way to move, to purify the mind is through sacrifice. So I will stop here. Are there any comments or points? Purify our heart. That's really interesting. I once tasted it. I think it was a Simply Wonderful cooked by Mother Yamuna. It's like this small. I remember it was something very extraordinary. Of course, I didn't get love of God after eating that because I wasn't so purified like this Mataji was. But many times, people experience this, for example, Jayananda Prabhu's cooking as well, or Srila Prabhupada's cooking. There's some memories about one time how different devotees made different items for a feast, and Srila Prabhupada had made khichdi. And it was all on one plate, and then the people were eating different items, but then when they got to the khichdi, they put it in their mouth, and this is a few people, you know, say that this is the honest truth, that they put it in their mouth, and the moment they put it in, everyone just became very quiet. Like it was something so, the khichdi was just like so tasty. And generally, you know, of all the items in a prasad, khichdi is kind of, you know, it's not the most, juicy, like gulab jamuns or rasagulas or sandesha, this or that. It's just khichdi. But when they put the khichdi in their mouth, it was just like no one had tasted anything like this before. And the point that this devotee was saying, that then he realized that, you know, that when we're very purified with anything, when we cook, you know, and we offer prasad to someone else, or when we speak, or when we sing, whatever we do, it really touches people's hearts. It's so surcharged with spiritual potency. Mm-hmm. Yes. Any other point? Comment? Yes. That's good. That's a good question. That's a good point. Because I have wondered about that myself as well. That because Krishna is saying, always remember me. But we may be remembering, you know, if we're, let's say, running a business for Krishna, then we have to remember, you know, the accounts, and we're working with the people and all these things. The idea is that if our intent is that we're doing everything for Krishna, and that's the pure intent, then for one thing, that throughout our day we will remember Krishna. In other words, whenever we have a spare moment, Krishna will come in our thoughts. But even in the activities of Krishna, if our intent is to serve Krishna, then remembering the activities, remembering the things that we're doing for Krishna, is as good as remembering Krishna. Just like when Mother Yashoda was feeding Krishna milk, right? She was breastfeeding Krishna. Then at a certain point, the milk on the stove overflowed. She was also boiling milk for Krishna. So she put Krishna aside and she went to close. She went to turn off the milk, take the milk off the stove. So when she was putting away Krishna, she had this, you know, big sort of confusion in her mind. She was trying to understand. She was trying to figure out that, should I continue feeding Krishna, because this is such important service? It is directly she's feeding Krishna, but the milk was also for Krishna. So she was saying, should I remove the pot of milk for Krishna? And so at the end, she decides, no, that's more important, because those cows, she had certain cows that would. Nanda Maharaj had millions of cows, right? But only certain few of them, three or four of them, Mother Yashoda used for Krishna. It was only three or four of those cows whose milk she used for Krishna, because they were very, very special cows. They were eating grasses, this special grass that she would specially select from the forest. And so as a result, because they were eating the most tasty grass, they had the most tasty milk. So that milk was very limited, and that pot, if it overflowed, then that milk wouldn't be there for Krishna. So she, at the end, she decides to put Krishna on the side and go and turn off the pot of milk. And Srila Prabhupada, or the Acharyas, the Acharyas, they write that how both feeding Krishna, breastfeeding Krishna, and turning off the milk were as good, right? Her decision to leave Krishna and tend to the milk on the stove was as much imbued with love as her decision to feed Krishna the breast milk. In fact, she was giving up Krishna's association in order to serve Krishna. And in some ways, that was higher. She wasn't trying to enjoy Krishna, because Krishna's face is so beautiful. And so she was immersed in, you know, meditating on Krishna's face and Krishna's form and holding him. But she put him aside so that she could serve Krishna. And so in some ways that's higher, right? But the devotee is such that ultimately, once we're very practiced, no matter what we're doing for Krishna, Krishna will always be in our thoughts. Right? So when Krishna is telling Arjuna that you fight, he's not just saying you fight, he's saying you fight and you remember me. Right? At the same time, while fighting, you remember me. So while he's fighting, naturally he has to think about the enemy, he has to think about shooting his arrows and all these things. But still, he still remembers Krishna, you know, in between all of his activities. So the point being that serving Krishna is just as good, but also in that service, the devotee, we shouldn't use that as an excuse. What I mean to say is that in our service, then also we try to chant and remember Krishna also. Is that answer? Okay, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namo Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prachadine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshata Jaya Shri